You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dog Pound, get the freshest Cleveland Browns gear by visiting the team shop at First Energy Stadium or shop on the official Browns mobile app. Also, don't miss the new Dog Pound t-shirts with a limited run only at the team shop at First Energy Stadium. 216-578-0850, the way to get aboard with myself, Nathan Zagura, and Matt Wilhelm. Marvelous Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. We've got Adam in Sandusky on the line. What's up, Adam?
Hello, Paz. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Real couple of quick things here, real quick. One is, I believe the Browns are going to win 23-16. Two, my biggest concern with this game is going to be the weather, I think. If rain is in the forecast, and I believe it is, I think the biggest thing would be to grab an early lead and hang on for however long the rain is going to last. And three, with a lack of a running game right now, can we not see some gadget plays to get into some, you know, second and short, third and short situations, take some of the pressure off Brian Hoyer?
I like your thoughts, and that's where, again, if you're a caller in this show in the last 2 weeks, I talked about once we struggled to run the football against Jacksonville and continue to do so against Oakland, I talked about innovation and manufacturing yards. That means coming up with a different personnels, different sets, different looks in the run game in which you still run the football, but then also to, you know, bubble screens, fake reverses, or, you know, reverse, you know, whatever it might be. Yeah, again, but anything. You're right. Gadget plays that teams haven't seen yet out of the Cleveland Browns that will catch them off guard that if executed properly, which might be tough on this short week unless it's something that we had ready for Tampa that we carry over and still like against Cincinnati. Otherwise, it gets thrown out. But I like those because it gives you a chance as a big play. And as we know, Gabriel, Speedster, Hawkins can run. You know, Austin, probably not going to go to him. But again, you got, you know, Crow.
Benjamin.
Exactly, Benjamin as well. So you have some speed to be able to do that. And my only thing is it's like, I guess in my eyes, Ben Tate might be the only running back, if it calls for a running back, that I trust to help execute. I'm not going to trust Terrence West because he's a rookie, and Isaiah Crowell because of his ball handling issues to be in on any of those types of plays. But maybe a Johnny play.
It could be a Johnny play. And listen, the last time they busted out was against Baltimore, a division game. We haven't seen a lot of trickeration since then. I think we could absolutely see some this week against Cincinnati. It would make sense if you had something in your back pocket that you've liked all year long. This is the time to go with it because winning this game, getting to 6-3, would really change the course of this season in a massive way. So this is one of those games. Let's just get it out there and throw the kitchen sink at them.
To finalize that point is I would like to say as well that it's not something that you force into a game. But if a scenario is created or a certain down and distance where you like this play, or in Kyle Shanahan's mind, he says, I've created this play to manufacture this in this type of scenario. Now, if it comes up, you know, you've got to have the guts to call those types of play, and those are risk-reward. Otherwise, you keep it in your back pocket, and you carry it again throughout the rest of the season.
That's what you do. This is how you dial this up. Here we go. Let's go now to Josh in Cleveland. Josh, welcome to CBD.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good, man. How you doing, bro?
I'm great. You know, I've been hearing so much about the Manziel Hoyer situation, and no one's given Hoyer enough credit. You know, he's working with a damaged line, you know, receivers that are just not, you know, not big-name guys. I mean, they're producing, surprisingly, but they're not no Josh Gordon or anything like that, and he's still, you know, winning games. And people want, you know, Johnny Manziel in there. What is he going to do that's any better than Hoyer's done? He's won us 5 games. No one wanted that or expected that. You know,
that's why there's no controversy. At least on this show, there's no controversy about the quarterback. It's Brian Hoyer's team. He's earned it. And as long as he continues to perform like he has and the wins continue to come in, Brian Hoyer will be the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, you know, I hope so. Him and I really want to see Crowell make his presence again. You know,
me too.
That Pittsburgh game, I'll never forget it. His presence made that game what it was. It made Hoyer more comfortable. It made those third downs a little bit more comforting. You know, the whole team seemed a lot more together when that running game was there. And I know without Alex Mack, it's been a struggle. But that's no excuse not to play him, and that's no excuse to, you know, not get it going again.
I agree. And we heard that from, you know, I asked that question yesterday about the three backs to Ross Tucker. You know, and he talked about that they're all a little bit different. And this might be a situation, again, against a team that gives up 140 yards on the ground per football game, ranked 31st in the National Football League, that – we can use the different personalities to our advantage, where a guy like Crowell might actually loosen up a defense for the running style of Tate or West, where they're a little bit choicier in wanting to cut back or, I hate to say it, but dance to get to the hole. Whereas Crowell is a one-cut runner. As long as he is decisive, he makes that. But I love also, too, that with these lights shining extremely bright tomorrow, the home run capability that Isaiah Crowell has, because there is no better way to have a visiting stadium sitting on their hands than making a big play in front of them, and no better time to do it than now, again, when those lights are shining bright.
Is it possible that they didn't give him a carry in this game on Sunday, knowing the short turnaround, so that he could be completely fresh to take on the Bengals? Is that possible? I don't think it is.
Highly doubt. I highly
doubt. You got to win every game. You don't just hide.
You don't keep any bullets in your gun, especially with the past history of the Cleveland Browns organization.
I agree. Stan in Brooklyn, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hey, Stan. How are you?
Good. I was on the line for 55 minutes yesterday, and I just wanted to pass this along your call screener to let people know that they're not going to take calls. You got the Farmer interview there, and kept everybody hanging, but
sorry about that, Stan.
We were unawares.
A couple of things that I wanted to say, if I could. Number one, I want to give a shout out to my grandson, Jacob Snyder. He's a prominent wrestler at Midview.
Nice.
Good luck, Jacob. Jacob Snyder. The other thing is that the grading on the Browns, as far as the team as a whole, for me personally, there's room for vast improvement, so I'll give them a B minus.
Okay,
I can't do any better than that. The other thing I had on my mind, and I talked to about seven or eight avid football fans that were at the game or watched it on TV, and this was a penalty. It was not on a kickoff. It was not on a punt return. I've never heard this call before. Maybe Matt, you can fill me in. I saw the replay on this. They called an illegal blindsided block by the offensive lineman or somebody. And I looked at it on the replay. I have never, ever, ever heard that call before. I'll hang up and you explain. Thank you.
What I believe it is,
The Bademosi hit?
Yeah, the call I think that they're talking about, it's similar to almost like a chop block penalty, when essentially a player is engaged with another player, or as in this case, it was garnering the attention of another player, and another player on the chop block, of course, goes low to kind of level the offensive lineman, or I'm sorry, defender, where in this case, I think Johnson, Bademosi, was running down the field and essentially engaged or hand fighting with a defender, and another player came in and blatantly hit them, coincides with that targeting rule, where he hit him kind of in the temple of his helmet or in the side of his helmet, leading with his helmet, which is why he incurred that penalty. If we're thinking about the play that you're thinking about.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. And listen, I think when you watch it on tape, it actually looks like a pretty clean hit.
Yeah, it did in my eyes.
Punishing hit in a violent game.
That targeting frame of mind, which is why the penalty was thrown. And I think they just might have explained it the wrong way. And sometimes, again, they're human as well.
In today's NFL, when you see a hit like that, they're just going to get the flag's coming.
You definitely are, because I think, and also too, they've been told and been taught all offseason by Roger Goodell and his staff of officiating, committees to, err on the side of throwing it as opposed to not throwing it.
No question. You guys continue to burn up the phone lines here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Fords. We'll be back with more of your phone calls. William McGinnis coming our way at 2:30, and then we're going to wrap it up, giving us our biggest concerns about the Bengals, the big matchup in that game, and our halfway point MVP on the Cleveland Browns. Coming up next here on CBD on ESPN 850 WKNR.